ambassador to hear the chief of Columbia's Continental Staff, William L. Shirer. We take you now to Berlin.
Hello, America. Hello, CBS. This is Berlin. The sands are running fast.
And hello. This is America, where the sands are also running fast. Let's check in at the front lines of the fight to save democracy.
On this vote, the yeas are 50 and the nays are 50. The Senate being equally divided, the vice president votes in the affirmative, and the nomination is confirmed.
Welcome to This is America. I'm your host, Rachel Bitticoffer.
And I'm Aaron Murphy.
Welcome to the bunker, friends. Thank you, subscribers, and especially to everyone sharing this pod with their friends. Well, the first week of Trump 2.0 was pure shock and awe. Aaron, take us on a quick tour of the headlines.
Yeah, the fire hose is full blast, and Rachel, we're going to take a gulp. Red flags be damned, Republican senators this weekend confirmed Christian nationalist and cable TV news host Pete Hegseth to be in charge of the most powerful military in the world and its 3 million employees. Republicans brushed aside numerous accounts of abuse and alcoholism to confirm Hegseth as Secretary of Defense, which means out DEI hires, in DUI hires. In a late Friday night massacre, President Trump purged 17 inspectors general from the federal government. These, by the way, are nonpartisan watchdogs, and they're tasked with making sure agencies follow the law and save taxpayers money. But don't worry, Trump is definitely not planning on doing anything illegal or anything that will waste your tax dollars. And as Americans were watching football over the weekend, Colombia refused 2 U.S. plane loads of undocumented deportees. But that ended when Trump threatened the world's largest cafefe producer with 25% tariffs on our caffeine. And Rachel, I remember picking you up at the airport last year and you brought your own espresso machine with you, so I know this one perked your ears. And remember this from last fall?
When I have nothing to do with Project 2025, that's out there. I haven't read it. I don't want to read it.
Well, get this. Out of 52 presidential directives that President Trump signed as of late last week, 28 of them, more than half, according to research by the Washington Post, have language that comes directly from the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025. And if that wasn't enough, after Trump pardoned leaders of the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers last week, he revoked the security detail for some of MAGA's favorite targets, including Dr. Anthony Fauci and former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Coincidence, Rachel?
I think not, Aaron. But it wasn't all bad news, because Cubans, a major GOP voting bloc, were the first to join the This Is America, Oops the Leopard Ate Your Face, Fuck Around and Find Out Club. They found out that Trump's executive orders on immigration, also block Cubans. So it was a lot to watch, and we know a lot of you can't stand to look anymore, which is why Aaron gave us that news roundup. I want you to hear a very important sound clip, though, from The Daily Show and their host, Jessica Williams.
Do not let them exhaust you. Don't let the constant draining bullshit wear you out. Do not turn away. Look it right down that barrel and say, not today, apathy. I'm only having half a case of Trulies. And no matter what happens, we have to throw our arms around the people who need us the most and hang the f*** on. All right?
So yeah, we got to be like doughboys in the trenches right now and stick to it. We have to protect Earth One Reality.
Yeah, I needed that clip. Thanks, Rachel.
I think out of the gate, though, I want to focus on Elon Musk, who is on some kind of world fascism tour, laying out his vision for protecting Western culture from the invading hordes.
You know, something I think that is just very important is that people take pride in Germany and being German. This is very important. It's okay to be proud to be German. This is a very important principle.
Yeah, this was a surprise, surprise, awkward appearance at a rally for the right-wing Alternative for Germany party. And what makes it so notable is that it happened right as Elon Musk was making light of the 2 Nazi salutes that he made during the inauguration last week. Now, this kind of talk from the world's richest brown noser is nothing new. About a year ago, he said this at a forum in Italy.
We don't want Italy as a culture to disappear. We don't want France as a culture to disappear. I think we have to have maintain the sort of reasonable cultural identity of the various countries.
And Rachel, you got a kick out of watching the video of that. Describe what happens.
Well, Musk is, as he's talking, the woman next to him, her body language is kind of like, oh, I don't want to be in the screen of shot anymore, right? And God love the man next to her, because he sensed it and pulled a little table out of the way. She saw that, and she was so happy She scooted immediately as far away as she could get from Elon Musk. He's like, he had the cooties. And it was just really indicative of how out of the world, fascist, weird Elon Musk and Trump are right now.
Elon Musk isn't the only Trump influencer getting cozy with Germany. Here's a clip from Steve Bannon. He was talking about Trump with the German newspaper Berliner Zeitung.
He's a blunt force instrument that's given blunt force trauma to the elites of this country and to the system that can no longer be allowed to stand. And so and we're far from victory. We won a massive victory in November 5th. The last 4 years have been a struggle, but that's just we're at the very beginning of this, and other countries are very beginning too. If you don't accept defeat, you can't be beaten. The only way every individual sovereignty party in the country can be defeated if you quit. If you don't quit, you'll eventually beat them. You'll wear them down because they don't really have a moral basis to stand on.
So, Rachel, as we mentioned last week, this pod is a callback to William L. Shires' This is Berlin broadcasts from the rise of Nazi Germany in the 1930s. Given all of your research and expertise in that area, what sticks out the most about comments like these?
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what Bannon is saying. You know, they are organized and they're really ready to flood the zone. That's why this episode's called Shock and Awe. I expected we would see shock and awe. It just continues to amaze me that people are surprised when they confirmed Pete Hegg's, you know, they'll be surprised the first time the filibuster gets in Trump's way and he may not eliminate it, but he'll give it an exemption, right? So I think it's really hard because, and that's why I wanted people to hear Jessica Williams. I think everyone who kind of works in the space right now is aware of how tired the resistance is after 10 years and seeing everything fail. But like that tiredness is part of their design and it is their surest path to domination. So we have to fight it really hard. So let's take a look at what the collective story is from last week. Much of Trump's cabinet is all in place, aside from the two most controversial picks, the RFK Jr. Nomination and the nomination of Steve Bannon's bunker buddy, Kash Patel, to lead the FBI. You know, Aaron, Lincoln had his team of rivals, but Trump just wants a team of cronies. Don't get stuck on the fact that Hegseth is completely unqualified to lead our military brass, the best in the world. He is there for one reason, to issue Trump's illegal orders down the chain of command. At some point in our future, those orders will come. And the question is, what will others in the chain of command do? Will they follow them? Trump wants to make sure that the answer is yes, because his first goal is to purge out all of what he calls the woke generals, because they're so woke, they believe in the Constitution and they have to get out of the way. They're loyal to their military training and ethics and duty to the law and Constitution and not personally loyal to Trump. So, you know, it's ridiculous. And it's also really frustrating the way the media just lets them set like the narrative that it's as reasonable to reform, quote unquote, these institutions. I mean, there's nothing wrong with any of them. There's nothing wrong with the FBI. There's nothing wrong with the DOJ. And there's nothing wrong with our military. But there's about to be something seriously wrong. I mean, our generals are the envy of the world.
Yeah.
Our national defense is going to be severely compromised. Putin, he must be having a party every night, okay? Because our future generals are going to be grads of Liberty U and not West Point. Because, Trump wants lackeys. And so we're really going to see what happens the first time that Trump turns to Hegseth and issues a command to him that is against the military oath.
Yeah, yeah. Spoiler alert, he's a narcissist.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just important for people to kind of get a sense of what to expect. I mean, seeing the cabinet, my guess is that RFK Jr. and Kash Patel will be confirmed at the end. and, you know, what we're going to see is Trump's not, he's not in this to put in the hours. He wants to go golfing. What he likes about being president is that everyone has to kiss his ass and cheer and salute him wherever he goes. That and the emoluments, right? Ching, ching. He's like the grifter presidency. He has turned himself from a fake millionaire that's only millionaire status by cheating on his taxes to an actual billionaire hawking I just saw Don Jr. hawking a gold a book on buying gold and investing in gold. It's so ridiculous, but it's our reality, right?
Sound investment.
And, you know, Republicans have capitulated on what they know are completely unacceptable, unqualified, you know, beyond the behavioral stuff, just on paper, really wacky cabinet picks. But they did it. And what's going to happen now is we're going to see, you know, this cabinet of cronies who are loyal to Trump above everything else, including the law and the Constitution.
Right.
But he needs deputies who take orders without question and execute those orders without concerns about breaking the law. And that way he can stay on the golf cart and get richer and richer every day. Guess who else liked to outsource all of his work to fanatical party hacks? I'll give you just one guess, buddy.
Well, let's just say he may have sounded a lot like this.
We will annex Poland by the spring at any cost. And our stock will rise high.
You know, you asked me earlier about Shire and Berlin in the 30s. What it reminds me of is this concept that emerged from the Third Reich as it started to evolve. Because keep in mind, the year zero for the Third Reich is 1933. What most people really know about that time period is almost 11, 12 years later. It's the 1940s, the way the regime ends in war and in genocide, right? But there's the other part of the regime that went on for a long time. And what Hitler and Trump have in common, I mean, they have a few things in common. They hate actual experts. They are germaphobes. They think they're smarter than everybody around them. They fire people who disagree with them. But one of the things that I think is going to be very similar is this concept that comes from Germany called working towards the Führer. And if you listen to transcripts of the Nuremberg trials or read a lot of the literature on this, you're going to see this mentioned quite a bit. And what that means is, you know, once they kind of autonomized or imperialized each of these agencies, the Nazis created new agencies and took some over, the individual chiefs were given a lot of power, a lot of discretion. And instead of having Hitler approve everything in a micro detail way, it was a concept of, oh, okay, well, I'm going to go and deport the Jews from Germany because that's what the Führer wants, to get rid of the Jews. And I'm working towards the Führer's goal, right? And, you know, that was also not coincidentally the defense in Nuremberg was, oh, you know, we had these commands, we have to obey orders. It wasn't me, it was Hitler, who was, of course, dead by then from suicide. So I think we're going to see a lot of that. And what that means for these agencies is going to be a lot of chaos because none of these people are there to run agencies. They don't even know how to do the jobs that they've been sworn in to do.
Yeah, and we can spend a moment talking about the confirmation hearings in the Senate that are currently underway. We've already heard several of the most fiery ones before Trump even took office last week. For example, Pam Bondi claimed that she wasn't even aware of what Donald Trump said about J6ers.
Are the felons convicted of breaking into the Capitol on January 6th hostages or patriots, as President-elect Trump has said repeatedly? Do you agree with his characterization of the felons that I referred to?
I am not familiar with that statement, Senator.
I just familiarized you with that statement.
And Rachel, what else about the confirmation hearings that harkens back to working toward the Führer?
Oh, I mean, you could look at what any Republican does in committee, you know, as, you know, just toeing the line for Trump, right? But you got to give it up to Tim Kaine. I mean, he at least gave it a spirited fight. I don't know if you caught his portion of the confirmation hearing, but he took Hegseth to task and really revealed, if the public would bother to look, just how ridiculous it is his nomination is, him leading the DOD.
Fully investigated and completely cleared.
So you think you are completely cleared because you committed no crime? That's your definition of cleared? You had just fathered a child 2 months before by a woman that was not your wife. I am shocked that you would stand here and say you're completely cleared. Can you so casually cheat on a second wife and cheat on the mother of a child that had been born 2 months before, and you tell us you are completely cleared?
Senator,
how is that a complete clear?
Senator, her child's name is Gwendolyn Hope Hegseth, and she's a child of God, and she's 7 years old.
Rachel, what do you say about some of the Republicans who are now gently criticizing Trump's picks? I'm thinking Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Susan Collins of Maine. All three of them voted against Hegseth, but it didn't matter.
Yeah, I can tell you guys this. You guys, we all have lots of reasons to despise Mitch McConnell. In fact, he has reasons to despise himself. I think he deep down in that little McConnell turtle head of his understands that what he set in motion by stealing that Supreme Court seat, right? But at the end of the day, when we look at the last couple of years of the Republican Party's chaos, especially during Biden, the thing that kept Ukraine in the war was Mitch McConnell, right? And the way he was able to do it is because he had about 8 members in his McConnell caucus that were sane, old school conservatives, not fascists, and would, you know, want to fund Ukraine and not give Ukraine to Putin. This time, though, many of them retired in the last election cycle, so they didn't run for re-election in 2024. The Senate that got sworn in this time, albeit it's a majority too, is very, very distinct. And people should understand the reason it was 3 votes is there is no more anymore of the McConnell wing, right? I mean, Thune is a new, fresh leader. He is a remainder of that. They did win the leadership fight and got the leadership position to Thune, but he understands that he's a dead man walking if he crosses MAGA. And you think about why you're seeing so much of Bay in advance, guys. It's because of the cost, right? If you're Mark Zuckerberg, Zuckerberg, that's funny. If you're Mark Zuckerberg and you wake up to a threat from the incoming president of the United States telling him he's going to send you to jail for life, you are incredibly incentivized to get in line. And Republican senators are incredibly incentivized to get in line. It's not about being primary necessarily even more. It's about death threats, having to get security for their houses. That's what, you know, political violence does for MAGA. And that's why Donald Trump pardoned the J6 defendants.
Okay, Rachel, so you texted this to me as soon as you saw it over the weekend, and both of us knew we had to talk about it on this podcast. This weekend, the New York Times published a powerful multimedia, it was an opinion piece called How Tyranny Begins.
It doesn't start with them kidnapping you.
It does not start with our exile.
They don't stuff the ballot boxes.
It starts with the government making hits.
It starts with overcomplicated red tape.
With the law.
With retribution.
Fake narratives and financial attacks.
Pretty compelling stuff there. And by the way, we'll link to that in our show notes. What's the takeaway for folks who might skip over the opinion section and, you know, go straight to Wordle?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could do the full video justice on audio on this podcast because it's a much more compelling video presentation. But why I want people to hear it is because it shows people understanding retrospectively, you know, looking in the rearview mirror, how clear the warning signs that their country was collapsing into authoritarianism were, and how they just continued to find ways in their own ways, in their own brain, to justify that it wasn't that bad, it wasn't going to be that bad, or it wouldn't get to this point. And basically all of them, their conclusion is the conclusion of my 4-year research odyssey, which is that nobody panics when there's still time to stop the tyrant.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the piece weaves first-person testimonies from 4 people. They're known in the piece as the journalist from Russia, who notes when Putin's government took over an independent newsroom in 2001. The political enemy, this is from the perspective of the nephew of the former prime minister of Singapore, who says that his uncle used investigations and prosecutions to go after his opponents and even made his own lawyer the attorney general of Singapore. Sound familiar?
I posted a private Facebook comment to my friends only, and the Singapore government went after me with a criminal prosecution.
Attorney General's Chambers has asked the High Court to fine Li Xingwu at least $15,000.
The steps were gradual, and every one of them was unbelievable for me.
It focused on the activist, a guy who ran a pro-democracy nonprofit in Nicaragua until it was canceled by the Ortega regime. And 4th, the academic, a person from Hungary who notes that dictators and autocrats like Viktor Orban go after academic freedom. But Rachel, the piece echoes one of the sharpest themes of our book, that democracy is fragile and it's sick, and that ignoring its health is exactly what people like Donald Trump and all of the weirdos who are working toward him want.
If you're used to living in a democratic society, you don't expect that a government could just go ahead and close a university.
I will fire the radical left accreditors that have allowed our colleges to become dominated by Marxist maniacs and lunatics.
Yep, I mean, that's what all this shock and awe we've been talking about. That's the point that, you know, hit them where it hurts was supposed to prevent this moment, because we always understood the best thing to do when you have a known insurrectionist, criminal, serial, sexual assaulting liar poised to reassume power when they already tried to hold on to power illegally once, right? It really means you need to bring your A game. So if you haven't checked out Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, I hope you will, because it's the key to reclaiming middle America back from MAGA propaganda.
Yeah, and as we point out in Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, we should never be afraid to criticize the news media, of course, because after all, quote, their farting under the sheets played a significant role in divorcing Americans from their interest in governing themselves. But in this case, the media, the New York Times, the opinion writers there, they're doing exactly what needs to be done.
Yeah, we're really seeing a mix from the media. A lot of this, like, we're just going to pretend from now on that everything is normal. And I think some of that is obey in advance and fear of retribution. But I also think some of it is just exhaustion, right? Like, people crave normalcy so much that they're willing to accept the abnormal as normal if it allows them to kind of move on emotionally, right?
Yeah.
We got a lot of brave reporting, you know. I mean, for me, on that clip, you know, what we're going to see is we're going to see academic purging. It's already put in place. It's been, you know, really championed by this guy named Chris Rufo. At some point, I am sure my own academic publishing record will be scrutinized under these guys. They're going through departments looking for people who are known, you know, what they call communist or socialist. Marxist, I mean, because they seriously think a country with no maternity leave, paid maternity leave, is on the brink of communism, and, you know, look for reasons to purge faculty. But that's how they operated before Trump. Trump was very clear. He, on his own website, Trump Agenda 47, the media could have chosen to show it to America. For months, it sat there, where he talked about ideologically purging academia of all the leftists. And that means basically all the humanities majors, all the gender studies majors, all the multiculturalism type studies, you know, they're going to purge these departments out. And it's going to be very interesting to see what Americans do in reaction to that.
You'll want to think it's not happening, because otherwise you might have to do something.
Take your finances out of the country. Try not to have a physical office space. They will seize all of your assets.
It is better to fight.
Every person unlawfully jailed, unlawfully harmed, is your business.
It is better to refuse rather than to give in and hope that somebody else will be the check and balance for you.
Well, Rachel, at least our Colombian coffee is safe for now. But let me tell you, we were promised cheaper grocery prices, and I'm still paying $15 a bag for my coffee. And I'm not the only one wondering, after all of Trump's promises to bring down the cost of groceries, what gives?
If you look at our slate of executive orders.
Well, so did Margaret Brennan. Here she is interviewing hillbilly expert turned Vice President J.D. Vance on Face the Nation this weekend.
No, Margaret, prices are going to come down, but it's going to take a little bit of time, mm-hmm. right?
Ah, the fine print.
Yeah, it's day six, dude. I mean, come on. I thought he had magic deinflation powers and he was just going to fix all of our food cost in one day.
Oh, by the way, the coffee I buy, it was just shrinkflated from 12 ounces a bag to 10 and a half ounces. So I'm looking at you, Tully's whole bean French roast. Don't think I didn't notice.
Keep those eagle eyes on the news cycle, Murph. We've got a lot to get back to. Till next time, you can always follow along with the shit show at The Cycle on Substack. You can follow me on Twitter. Feel free to drop us a line, make suggestions for the show. But the most important thing that you can do for us, if you can hear our voice, is to tell your friends and family to give us a listen.
Yeah, that Substack address, by the way, is thecycle.substack.com. Please do subscribe. And if you like what you see or hear, consider a paid subscription. That helps keep fuel in the tank. And this podcast, by the way, is now available on most platforms. So please share it far and wide. And check out our book, Hit 'em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. That's at hitemwhereithurts.com. We're coming up on the 1-year anniversary of its publication, and well, it's more relevant than ever. Rachel, final word of advice for the week ahead.
Dude, I'm going to roll with Jessica Williams. No matter what happens, we have to throw our arms around the people who need us the most and hang the fuck on.